I'm Dax Carlisle. I'm here with Gary Karp, and Mary Brown's here too. You may not see her. I don't know if you'll see her on the broadcast because she has her camera turned off, but she's got her mic on. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Dax. Hey, Gary.
Hey
everybody.
Woo-hoo. We are live. International Tarot Day, 7-8, July 8th. I think for obvious reasons why 7-8 is International Tarot Day. So we're celebrating all weekend here at the Tarot Guild, and just wanted to kick things off by mentioning a little bit about, we're actually calling it International Tarot Weekend because we got stuff going on all weekend. Tomorrow is our regular broadcast of Tarot Today Radio, so Mary and I will be continuing the celebration tomorrow, right, Mary?
Yes, yes. It's a tarot party all weekend.
So feel free to call in on our radio show tomorrow. You'll see all the posts for it and everything. It'll be 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And of course, we'll be taking your phone calls. Tell us your favorite, you know, tarot story or how you discovered tarot or ask for a mini reading. We'll be doing that. And then on Sunday is Magic Universe radio show and podcast with Sharona Rapsik, and Sharona has on the fabulous Sasha Graham, and they're going to be talking about, of course, Rider-Waite Smith. They're going to be talking about the Waite Smith deck. So we got events going on all weekend. So we decided to call it International Tarot Weekend, even though today is actually 7-8 International Tarot Day. So what is this? Well, this is a grassroots movement that arose to create International Tarot Day, started in 2017. And it's a non-commercial, decentralized, untrademarked event, not associated with any particular organization, group, or individual. It's for everyone. And there's a lot of ways to celebrate. You can do a blog hop, a local meetup. Maybe you hold a contest, create a tarot deck, get a reading, give a reading. Maybe you're giving free readings this weekend. Teach a workshop. Maybe do an article on Medium or your local newspaper or magazine, TV, radio. You know, the sky's really the limit. How you could be celebrating. I'm sure a lot of you out there have even better ideas than I could think of off the top of my head there. But, and then, you know, if you're doing something this weekend or next year or the year after, use the hashtags. So it's pound International Tarot Weekend or pound International Tarot Day, or like I do, I use both. And that way we can, you know, whether you're doing it on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, LinkedIn, we can see what everybody's doing, you know. And we pretty much, Gary and Mary, we pretty much threw this together last minute. I was telling Gary before we went live and before you even got on here, Mary, that, you know, I was doing the 4th of July sale for the Tarot Guild and everything like that, you know, 7-4. And I thought of 7-8 and I was like, oh yeah, International Tarot Day. And it's been 5 years since 2017 and you know, tarot's just become even more popular, more mainstream over the last 5 years. And I just last minute, I was like, oh, you know, we should mention that on Tarot Today Radio this coming weekend. And then I noticed about or recalled that Sharona was having Sasha on and talking about Rider-Waite Smith, and I was like, oh wow, we got like it's totally not planned, but it seems to be falling into place. And then I was talking to Gary and we came up with the idea to do this kickoff here on a Facebook Live. So it kind of all fell together last minute.
Yeah.
And I was talking with Gary beforehand, and I said, you know, next year, imagine if we actually plan this.
Yeah. If we plan this, we definitely got a lot of good things that even in the 5 minutes in the green room that we were talking about kicking around that I believe yep. the tarot community is going to love. I do want to thank you for having me on here for this kickoff event. And I think it's a really great idea that you had that instead of the guild, which the guild is known as an organization for tarot professionals and just tarot lovers to teach them how to read tarot, to teach them the meanings and symbols of the different cards, to teach different spreads, to teach how to establish your business or to grow your business. But this weekend is really about the love of tarot. And we all have that story of how we got introduced to tarot and why it is so important to us. And Dax, as the figurehead, the if you pardon the expression, the godhead of the Tarot Guild, I think it would be really cool for the community, those people who are listening, the members of the guild, to learn a little bit about your tarot journey and your first introduction to tarot, what got you into it, and why you love it so much and why it was important for you to start the guild and spread tarot through the community. So why don't you kick things off and let us know a little bit about how you got introduced to the world of tarot and what it means to you.
Oh, that's a great idea. We should all share our story. And who knows, maybe some other folks will pop on here and do the same. Like I said, a little bit last minute, so we didn't have the opportunity to pre-plan a lot of this, but you know, next year, maybe we can get a lot more folks on. Another idea, just to throw this out, is because not everybody can join us live, maybe do some mini short interviews with a lot of folks in the guild and in the tarot community at large and get everybody's, you know, origin story, their superhero origin story, right?
Yes. So what was the radioactive spider that bit you?
Well, you know, like a lot of people from my generation, you know, if you go way back, there's depictions of tarot, you know, popping up on TV and even, you know, old movies going all the way back into, you know, the early 20th century. But I think the big one was Live and Let Die.
Mm-hmm. The James Bond film, Jane Seymour.
Jane Seymour.
And
yeah.
Flip Wilson, if I remember correctly, played the baddie in that.
No one even knows who that is. Boy, we are really dating ourselves.
Oh, in my age.
Yeah. So, you know, that was kind of like the radioactive spider bite there. Unlike other people, I don't have the cool tarot story where I just, you know, dived in and it became my life's work, you know, at the age of, I don't know how old I was then, you know, like six, you know, or I'm trying to think when that movie came out. I think it was 70. Have to look that up. Early 70s, you know. So I don't know. 8, 10, 9.
Somewhere around there. I think Live and Let Die was 78 or 79. I know I was 12, so you're probably around the same age.
I was, you know, totally fascinated by it, but I did not, you know, jump headlong. You got to remember, this is before the internet, folks. Yes, there was a time when you couldn't just Google everything. And there was a time when there wasn't the tarotguild.com and all the other blogs and God, the thousands of decks and books that we have now, you know, didn't exist as well. And I couldn't just run out to my local bookstore. You know, nowadays you can go on Amazon and order anything and it arrives at your house. back then you had to actually get your parents to take you, you know, to the bookstore. It was even pre the bookstores that we know, some of which are now defunct, like Borders and Barnes and Noble didn't even exist.
Oh, I miss Borders. That was a great bookstore. So what was it about Live and Let Die and the depiction of Taro in there? Because all I remember is the last scene, or the scene where Bond finally seduces Jane Seymour by pulling out the lover's card. And it turns out that he's got a deck of nothing but the lover's cards.
Nothing but the lover's cards.
What was it about?
Earlier, she pulled the death card, you know.
Yep.
And it was just intriguing to me that, you know, this even existed. And just like everybody else, I was drawn into, you know, when we start with tarot, our, I think if we really admit it, most of us are drawn to the initial excitement of, let's predict the future. Oh my God, you can actually predict the future with a deck of cards, you know? And of course, that's not what most of us actually do with tarot. We can get into that later on. But that was probably the initial interest. And then throughout, you know, the 70s and into the 80s, I saw a lot more movies and television shows with people with tarot cards, but it was kind of a back of the head kind of thing. Like, I mean, it wasn't, like I said, you know, plus, you know, I grew up Catholic. My parents were not going to allow me to go down and buy a tarot deck. They were not going to drive me to the bookstore and buy a tarot book, you know. You know, there a lot of people I've heard some of their stories where, you know, they said, yeah, you know, you can go, we'll take you down to the store, you can buy any book you want. And I found this tarot book, you know. Yeah, you had more enlightened parents, and you're probably a decade or two younger than me if that's your origin story, because when I was growing up, you know, I mean tarot was taboo as far as the generation, you know, right before us, which was our parents, you know, and before them my grandparents, forget it. You know,
I understand, I'm getting there.
he's like what, yeah, hold on, there's a story here, you know. Okay.
It's like herding cats, folks.
Yeah hang on. Okay, because the thing I want to get across is that, you know, I didn't go headlong, and I don't have the fantastic tarot story. Actually, I got more interested in, I was in a science, and I was really into quantum physics, and I saw some of the spooky stuff in that, and one of my big interests was geometry. And doing research into geometry brought me to sacred geometry. And I started studying that. And that led to numerology and Pythagoras. And then down the line, I rediscovered tarot. I was actually studying, I think it was after the Air Force. And I was actually studying counseling. And I had a close friend, it was my birthday. And a close friend of mine said, you know, you should look into tarot. And that's when, you know, the childhood memory of Live and Let Die just pops in. Like, there's Jane Seymour all over again, you know. And it's like, oh, you know, I always wanted to study tarot, but there was no way in my family I was going to be able to. But my friend said, hey, I've got like half a dozen books on it, the subject. And he just gifted them to me. And then for my birthday, he gave me my first tarot deck, which was the Dragon Tarot. And by this time, of course, I am an adult. So, and there was Borders and Barnes and Noble. And so, you know, I went down and I bought a universal weight deck. And I started reading these books that my friend had given me. And I was like, wow. I was extremely fascinated. First of all, I saw the benefit of using the cards and having it as a focus. So when you're doing counseling or life coaching with someone, that you have something to use to jog their subconscious mind. I saw that right away. And fortunately, because I had studied sacred geometry and numerology before diving in, and by the way, at this point, yes, I did dive in like crazy. And I started buying every book I could possibly find, you know, and I started, you know, taking notes and studying and doing readings for people and things like that. But, you know, I saw the connections right away. I had studied sacred geometry, so the five platonic solids, and so the elements, and I'm looking at the tarot deck and the structure, and I'm looking at the, you know, numbers and the elements, and I'm like, the tarot deck is just a physical embodiment of sacred geometry. And I was like, wow, you know, and then, oh, 78 cards. There's 78 lines to create Metatron's cube in the Power of Life. And I saw all the connections. And so, yeah, that's when I went nuts at that point.
Okay. And Mary, I know, and I've heard part of Dax's origin story, never heard yours. And I'm dying to know how you went from crack and ace Hollywood reporter to tarot diva maven. So can you let us know a little bit about how you got introduced to the tarot and what that transition from Hollywood reporter to tarot reader coach was like, or if it was at the same time?
Yes. So,
you'll see her on the broadcast.
You know, my very first introduction to tarot was really when I was about 15 years old, and I had such a great friend. It was just like, I don't know, my best friend, Rick, if you're out there somewhere in the world listening, hello. But he was, what we refer to as, Roma, I think is right. You know, back then, he was, you know, it's like the Roma. He called himself a gypsy, you know, back in the 80s.
And Romani or Romani, yes.
Yeah. And he was just, I don't know, he was just, we had so much fun, you know, goofing around and everything. And his grandmother, who I met because she liked fortune cookies and I liked fortune cookies, and we'd go to the grocery store and buy a big box of fortune cookies and go eat them with his grandma. I think she was some sort of professional tarot reader or something, but she showed me the cards and, you know, just sort of, it wasn't like an official reading or something. I didn't know anything about that, really. I didn't know anything about tarot, but the way she showed them to me, it was like a book of life. You know, she would pull a card and I would be like, that's, and she would explain it to me and I'm like, oh my God, how do you know that? You know, and I felt like all self-conscious, like, am I just like showing everything somehow and I don't realize it, you know, and somebody can just pull a card and tell me how I feel. And she explained to me that it was a book of life, that everything that I would go through in life was depicted in that deck in some way, you know, and that I could just pull a card to get advice if I wanted to. And you know, and that really fascinated me. My friend bought me a tarot deck and I was like, oh, cool. And I hid it away like it was some big secret thing. And then later I went to, I was in the Army, like I joined the Army at 18 and I was at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey studying Polish. And I had a Green Beret boyfriend who was really into tarot and stuff. And there was a cool magic store in Monterey, and he bought me a deck there. And then, you know, I spent 8 years in the Army, and I would use it for myself and do readings in the barracks, you know, on the weekend, you know, for friends and stuff. But it was something I always read intuitively. I didn't really think about it much. And then later, you know, I'm working in Hollywood as a reporter. And one of my assignments was to interview a famous TV psychic, John Edward. He used to have that show Crossing Over. And he writes a lot of books. And, you know, in order to do the interview, you have to read the book. You know, the publicist makes sure you read the book first. You know, the talent wants you to read the book. So I read his book, and there was this huge section on tarot. And the way his writer voice is, like, I hear it in my ears, and it sounds like almost like chastising. You must study this. You need to know the history. You need to find a tarot community. And I'm like, uh-oh, I didn't do any of that, you know? And so that's how I found the Tarot Guild. And that was while I was still working in Hollywood. And the interesting thing about the Guild was it was the first time that I saw what seemed like otherwise like regular people that like were doing tarot. And I was like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. And I just got so fascinated and enamored with the history of it. I got so, you know, like I think a lot of people do, just, you know, the whole Golden Dawn thing, like, just made my head swim. And I'm like, I'm going to master the opening of the key spread, you know. And I spent, I don't know, countless hours doing those five operations. And then there came a point after about 12 years in Hollywood that, you know, I had to move back to Texas because my husband's mother and brother-in-law were both terminally ill. And, you know, I couldn't really continue to be a Hollywood journalist from the middle of nowhere in Texas. And I was like, wow, could I do this? Like, really? And, you know, I got on a reading service, which I was like, oh my God, they're letting me do this. And I just, it's been the best choice ever, because it's the first time I haven't spent all my time working, you know, to make somebody else successful, you know. And it's just the best thing that's ever happened in that way.
Wonderful. Let me throw this out to both of you guys right now, because it seems that tarot has touched and been a large part of each of your lives and have moved you in different directions. What would you say was the greatest benefit of learning, not only learning about the cards, but learning the meanings and the structure? And Mary, I think you put it as the book of life that the tarot gives you. What was the biggest lesson or the biggest influence you could see looking back, how tarot changed you or influenced your life for the better?
For me, it was monumental, because I always gravitated towards, I mean, I was a workaholic, really. In the Army, I was a workaholic, you know, working in other jobs and in Hollywood. And I'm used to a very, 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 very high level of stress. And I can pretty much handle that on the job in jobs that would extend, but, you know, beyond working hours. But at the same time, I couldn't work at that level and not have it just kind of affect, you know, how I was regularly. And something about tarot, it's like when I would get like way, way wired like that, I would do a reading for myself, and it just kind of helped me modulate that. It's just such an objective third party voice on what's going on, you know. And I pull a couple cards and I would be like, oh, okay, I can calm down. All right. Yeah, that's the way it is. So, you know, and it makes such a big difference, because it's really, you know, it affects everything if you work at a really high level of stress, and it affects your relationships and how you interact and just move in the world. And I needed it for that. I really did.
Okay. And Dax, I know, you know, we all get into reading the tarot, as you said, that first blush of, oh, wow, I can tell the future kind of deal. And we all start to study. Mm-hmm. And if you guys are anything like me, I'm a cynic at heart, even though I've been working with tarot for, I think, about 30 years now or something like that. I still say that I come from Missouri. It's, you know, you got to show me in order for it to work. So what was that moment for you when you took all the practical, all the reading and all the studying, and all of a sudden the light bulb went on and it went, oh my God, this is real.
Right. Yeah. And seeing it as something different than, oh, cool, I can predict the future. Yeah. You know, I mean, not everybody comes to the tarot that way, but I think a lot of us, if we're honest, especially if we're like really young, when we're first introduced to it, we have, even if we don't want to admit it consciously, you know, it's in the back of our head. It's like predicting the future, you know, but when you work with it, it's so much more than that and so much deeper. By the way, Gary, we have to get your origin story, your super tarot superhero origin story.
Yes.
So what happened for me was a few different things. Remember, I'm at this point, I'm a recovering Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel spiritual, yet I don't have anything really grounding me. And then through the tarot, I'm able to create ritual and develop my own spirituality.
Okay.
And it allowed me to have a focus, to do rituals, meditations, a lot of things like that, where, you know, not using the deck to predict the future or even do readings for people, but doing readings for myself. And then instead of spreads, doing lays. So that's when you go through the deck face up and you're pulling mm-hmm. cards on purpose,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then I would focus on a particular card or a few cards. But then, you know, doing readings for myself and for other people, you start to see all the synchronicities and you see all how everything's connected and how we're all connected. And so it's just huge. It's huge. It's life-changing because you start to see, wow, you know, not just, it's like there's this aha moment where, okay, something's really going on here. This is real. But it's even beyond that. You're able to see that we're living in cycles within cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how the tarot works, is through synchronicity. And it opens up a whole new world, because unlike belief systems where you are going by faith and reading something in a book that someone wrote 2000 years ago, instead you're having direct experience with the divine. That's how I look at it.
Okay. And Mary, what was your aha moment when it went from, okay, this is kind of cool, it's interesting, to, wow, this is real. There is something there. There's a connection to the infinite. There's a connection to the universe. What was that moment for you?
Yeah, I think it was sort of that first moment where the cards that my friend's grandmother pulled reflected exactly what I was feeling. And then when I started doing readings for other people when I was in the Army, they would have that moment too. And I kept thinking, like, okay, there's something going on here, because I'm not doing this on purpose, but am I doing it on purpose? It was that weird otherness kind of feeling to it. And then also everything just made sense when I really dug into studying it. And not I didn't become so enamored of the structure of the deck in a sense. I just accepted it. It was the elements for me more than anything when it comes to like the structure of it and relating that to nature. You know, nature is a huge source of inspiration for me, and I could experience that the elements of air and fire and water and earth, and it made me feel so connected that I felt like this is almost like whoever made it gave us a great gift to allow us to be connected to the planet we live on, the world we're living in. And I just was really moved by that.
Cool.
And I got a question for both of you, but Gary, you got to give us your origin story and your aha moment.
Okay. So my origin story and my aha moment, I would love to say that I had that epiphany that I walked into a metaphysical store and saw the tarot on a bookshelf and it just started calling to me and vibrating on the bookshelf. Mine is a little bit more base. I was 25 years old at the time. I was recovering from a car accident that left me with two broken legs. And at the time, I had a friend who I was hanging out with a lot and that I was crushing really, really hard on. And one night we were hanging out in her dorm. We were just sitting, talking, and every couple of minutes, somebody would come in from the dorm hall and, you know, put down $5 or $10, and she would pull out these strange cards with pictures on them and throw a couple of cards and flip through the little white book and give them answers to their questions. And this happened 3 or 4 or 5 times during the night. I had no idea what was going on. So I asked her, what are those? And she explained to me that they were tarot cards. And my mind went, aha, here's how I can get close to her. Right? It didn't go secrets of the universe. It went, here's how I can get close to her. So I went out the next week, not knowing anything about it, not doing any research before internet. It wasn't really easy to do. And I went to my local New Age bookstore, which thankfully there was around the corner. And I bought my first tarot deck, which was the Merlin Tarot, because I'm a huge Arthurian Legend fan. P.S. It is the absolute worst deck to start with. Because as I learned later on, it is not a traditional tarot deck. It's more of an oracle deck. Putting that aside, the next week, I see her again. And I'm like, hey, look what I got. This tarot deck, perhaps you can, give me some lessons, figuring, hey, here's a way that we hang out together in a nice, intimate learning situation. She could see what kind of great guy I am and things will proceed naturally from there. And she looks at me and she says, oh, I don't believe in any of that crap. I just do it for beer money.
Refreshing.
So that was a little bit of an off-putting thing. So still, I figured I had this deck. Let me see if I can learn what's going on. What the heck? And I tried and I tried and I tried for a couple of months, maybe a year, to really get into that deck, not knowing what I was doing, just using the booklet that came with the Merlin Tarot and the larger book that you had to buy separately that was written specifically for it, which is a fantastic book for that deck, by the way, out of print right now, unfortunately. And I really couldn't get past having to look up the definitions and the meanings and everything like that. So I put it away. And this was, I guess I was about 27 at the time. So now fast forward 12 years into the future. And I am going through a divorce. I'm living in Florida at the time. And I'm walking my dog around the parking lot of the gated community that I live in. And this woman is sitting on her porch smoking a cigarette. You know, this much cigarette, this much ash. And she stops me. She says, you know, hey, I'm really sorry to hear what's happening to you because, you know, gated community, everything is patent place. There are no secrets. And then she invites me in for coffee. So I put the dog, I take Abby home and I put Abby back and I walk back to her apartment for a cup of coffee. And I don't walk in the door for more than 3 seconds when she turns to me and she goes, do you read tarot? She put the hard T on it. And this wow. took me by surprise because with the exception of 12 years ago when I was studying the Merlin Tarot and a couple of my friends knew, no one else knew that I was interested in tarot.
Eerie.
And there was something in my head at that time that was just pushing me to learn about it more, but I wasn't really sure. So to have this woman turn to me and point blank ask me was a little freaky.
Yeah.
And I said to her, well, yeah, I picked up a deck about 10, 15 years ago. I really didn't connect to it, didn't understand it. I'm thinking about studying a little bit of it again. And she went, you should do that. You've got the gift. You should do that. I'm like, wow. Okay, lady. Okay. So after the coffee, I went home and like every good tarot person does, I went on to Amazon and I bought two or three decks. I bought the Rider Waite. I bought Ciro Marchetti's Gilded Tarot, which I still love. And I bought a couple of books and I started to learn from there. And that's when I really took a deep dive into everything and everything coalesced for me. And really, I found a community of people who love tarot, who love studying it. Mary, as opposed to you, I really enjoy the structure and the symbolism of the tarot. I think that is what I love most about it, that it gives a structure, right? It's not all loose, that there's a rhyme and a reason for everything. And I really loved learning about that. And everything just took off from there. So opposed to everybody else who goes, oh, let's go witchy, let's go foretell the future, I was like, I need a date this Saturday.
I love that.
He always brings it back to that. But actually, if you think about it, James Bond did the same thing using the tarot.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And like I like to say, I didn't get the girl, but I got a lifelong friend in tarot.
Aw, that's and beautiful.
As far as my aha moment, and I remember this, it was two distinct situations. Excuse me. I know it's bad form to smoke on air, but hey.
No there were guilt. Two formal live.
There I were two. There were two different readings that I did. One was I was invited to a. I'm trying to get the right order, and I can't remember which order they came in, so I'm just going to go with the first one, and then I'll go to the second one. I was invited by a woman I met who. Ran her own coven to attend a Beltane celebration at her house. Now, I didn't know anything about Wicca, paganism, magic, anything like that. And I went there and I had my deck with me, of course, and I was just giving impromptu readings. And this woman sat down next to me, asked for a reading, and I gave her one and I basically said, look, regarding your business, your boss is, you know, it looks like you're going to be asking for a promotion. Your boss is not going to give you that. You're not going to get the respect that you want at your job. You'd be better off leaving and taking another position elsewhere. And she sort of like looked at me like, yeah, okay, fine, and went away. About 2 weeks later, I get a call from her. And she goes, you know, I walked into my boss's office and asked for a raise, and he flat out told me no. And if I didn't like it, I should just quit. So that's what I did.
Wow.
And she now has a job. I've lost track of where she is now, but she is much happier doing once she left the job. And I went, huh, something. Okay. That was kind of cool. You know, at that time I didn't make the connection of this is real. I was full up in my ego. I went, wow, look what I did. Right. The next time I did a reading was for a friend of mine from high school, and she just wanted a general reading, and we were on the phone. And I threw out the cards, and I'll never forget this, the Empress reversed came up. And I just got the feeling strongly that there was a miscarriage somewhere. Right? So how do you bring this up delicately? And how do you bring it up to a childhood friend that really you haven't spoken to or seen in 20 years? So I hemmed and I hawed and I said, look, this is going to be difficult, but I really got to tell you this. I'm seeing that there's some sort of miscarriage here. And she went, oh yeah, I had my tubes tied last year.
Wow.
And those were really the two aha moments that went, okay, there is something here. You can connect to, for lack of a better term, the cosmic consciousness. And that, hey, you know, and again, I can't remove ego from it because that's who I am. You're really good at this. You know, your Greek grandmother, which I came to call the woman back in Florida, really did say you had a gift and, hey, maybe there's something here. So that is the spider bite story for me. And my aha moment that let me know there may be something to this beyond just smoke and mirrors and carnival tricks and entertaining people at parties.
Yeah.
And what I'm getting from all of this, because of the generation we come from, that the newer generations don't realize how easy they've got it. That literally all this information is at their fingertips, you know, literally on their phone. You know, we've got in our hand a super powerful computer and the sum total of human knowledge, including tarot, numerology, and astrology, and everything else related, right? Kabbalah and sacred geometry. And it's all there at their fingertips. When we started out, it was a much harder, longer road to hoe, so to speak.
Yeah, and I'm going to go a little Gran Turismo, get off my lawn, you stupid kids, here for a moment. Because I feel that these things, right, have really taken away something, right? While we may have gained in technology, we have lost in wisdom. And because this makes it so, because these devices and the internet and Google and YouTube make it so easy, that number one, it's hard to discern what is true from what is just somebody talking because they're talking and they really haven't done the research on anything. And because it's so easy, I don't feel that today's generation of tarot readers, that's people from generation beyond ours, really does have the appreciation for the history, for the structure, for anything.
On the other side of the coin, I do, because you're bringing up something that I wanted to mention, and but it's on the other side of the coin. I did want to talk, because it's International Tarot Day, International Tarot Weekend, a little bit about the future of tarot and how it's become more mainstream and so popular. And I think that's being driven by the internet and our
country. Yes. You know. I think it's being driven by the internet. I think it's being driven by availability, but by the same token, and again, I'm going to go back to get off my lawn, you kids. Okay. And I'm not saying this is right or wrong. I'm saying this is my opinion. This is my belief. You could agree or disagree with me. Anybody, and Mary, no disrespect, because I know you have done the work. Anyone who says, I am an intuitive tarot reader, I don't need to learn, I don't need to study, to me is not a tarot reader. You may be using a tarot deck, but you're doing it to give a divinatory reading. You are not reading tarot. And really, you're just telling a story based upon what your subconscious is giving you.
Oh, we've often said that, right? You know, psychics that use tarot cards as a prop, but it has absolutely nothing to do with the information they're giving to the client.
Right. And I'm not saying that you can't use tarot in that way and give a perfectly accurate reading, but you're not reading tarot. And that may be a semantical difference, but I think it's an important one that we're learning. I also think, and I'm really going to get some hate mail for this, folks. Don't flame me too bad. That the internet, and for lack of a better term, the permissiveness of, well, okay, just grab the deck and read, and what do you feel?
Yeah.
Right? Feeling is important. That's your intuition. That's your gut. That's the cheese on the taco that lets you take your readings to the next level. You've got to marry them both, but just using the feeling, you're missing out on the wisdom of what those cards mean, of what that structure and those symbols are talking about.
But I also think you really can't read without intuition.
Yes, yes, definitely. If you were just reading by book learning and you're never getting rid of the book and you're just sticking with the keywords, well, then you're reading a phone book, right? Mm-hmm. You're not doing anything. You're not giving your gift to the world or to the reader. You're just picking out a book. You might as well be reading a textbook on U.S. history at that point. Right?
Well, I would like to say something to this. First of all, in my just opinion, I think, you know, you can't gain wisdom without seeking for it. You have to do the work. You have to go on that quest for knowledge. You have to go on that journey through experiences. And you know, reading intuitively, I think, means so many different things to different people. I get the whole idea of psychic reading, I suppose. For me, it's like the Rider-Waite-Smith especially. And, you know, different decks based on it. The feeling is there in the cards. It's in the way that it's depicted. You can't look at the body language and sometimes the facial expressions of cards, like say the Five of Cups, I think is a great example, and just feel that. And maybe you know, if you're some great psychic, you can lay out the whole story or whatever, but I just remember looking at cards like that and just, oh, you know, just knowing that there was some letdown, that there was some sense of disappointment, but that it could also be, you know, something that, you know, like spilt milk, you know, not worth getting so caught up in, like, don't cry over it, you know?
Right. And to that point, Mary, just to use the Five of Cups example, you can look at it, and if you see the card, you know there's some issue, you know there's some pain going on. You don't have to be a psychic, and you really don't have to be connected intuitively to your higher self to know that.
Yeah.
However, when you know the structure of the deck, even if it's as simple as knowing that cups represent emotion and that fives represent conflict.
Yeah.
In the structure of the 1 to 10 of the minor arcana, you have something more that you can go on.
Yeah. Right?
Now,
I agree.
That doesn't even include looking at the card and understanding that the man has his back turned. He doesn't see that there's one cup standing, so that there's still good going on in his life, that he has his back turned to the town in the background. So he's turning his back on the family where he could be getting help. Okay.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of symbols, there we go, that you can pull from if you're looking and you take the moment to learn it And that, I think, is what drives me more nuts than anything else. Someone who just wants to lay out the cards and what is the feeling without doing the work.
Yeah.
That's why I teach tarot by the numbers and teach tarot and numerology side by side, along with the elements and sacred geometry. So you get the full picture, basically. But, you know, it also cuts both ways. You know, I think Arthur Waite and Pamela Smith were, you know, brilliant. If you notice, all the swords are broadswords. They have an edge on both sides. They cut both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because so much in life and in the physical universe is dualistic and cuts both ways. Just like what we're talking about right now with the internet, you know, so there's the really positive aspect of it that it's allowing tarot to become more mainstream and popular, and then the information is available. But then you have the other thing about the internet where, yeah, the information's readily available, but back in our day when you could only get it from a one-on-one with a teacher or in a book, and those books were, you know, not something someone typed up and threw on Amazon, but, you know, went through a publisher, you were getting really good information.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, anybody that wants to can put up anything that they mm-hmm. want. And so things get watered down. There's information that is absolutely wrong.
Oh, yeah.
About tarot on the internet. Oh, yeah. You know? And it can confuse a lot of people. So there's both sides of it.
And yeah. to that index, I was doing some research the other day on a project I'm working on now. And I was watching a lot of videos on the hero's journey in tarot. And this one person related the final step of the hero's journey, the elixir, returning with the elixir, being victorious, to the Seven of Cups, because you are then bringing your gifts back to the community. And I'm going, that's not what the Seven of Cups is about.
Yeah.
The right. And also to that same thing, without the learning, then the I guess falseness would be the wrong word, but it's the only word that's coming to my mind, of perpetuated stories about different cards become fact. You look at the Three of Swords, and the immediate thing that people think of the Three of Swords is relationship troubles, somebody cheating on someone, threesomes, things like that, affairs. But if you think about what the Three of Swords is really talking about, right? Swords being intellect, at least for most of the people who learn tarot, it's intellect. I do understand that some people learn it as passion. I learned it as intellect. And threes being the full expression of the suit, then what that Three of Cards is really talking about is being purely logical. It's the Spock card in that case, denying your emotion. And that also is representative in the picture of the swords piercing the heart, because you're not allowing or you're destroying that emotion, which is important to making decisions or anything else. And without the knowledge of what the structure is, then you're going to look at that. You're going to say, oh, hearts piercing by swords. Well, there's relationship problems.
I often had the same line of thinking. Because I knew the structure, because I knew the element and air and swords and three, communication and creativity, and looking at the usual definition of the card and the heartbreak and loss and possible, you know, love triangles and all that kind of thing. I believe that that's there. Yeah. And I can see that being used that way, but a lot of it is emotion. And the first thing to me is, wait, this is not a cups card. It's not the Three of Cups. It's Three of Swords. Swords mm-hmm. are thoughts and ideas, you know, and a lot of people don't take the time to look at that, you know. So a lot of what's going on with the three of swords to me is what's going on in their head, not what they're feeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think of it as anguish.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that's a mental process.
It's a mental process, you know, and sure, you know, you think you see the imagery. You know, three swords right through the heart, you know, we do connect it to the heart. We connect the heart to, you know, relationships, that kind of thing. But it's the anguish we feel in our mind. It's the way we think about it. It's that dividing aspect of it that has always struck me as the, you know, kind of the big thing with the three of swords. But, you know, the thing is like, how do you guys account for weird things that happen when you're doing a reading? Like I always think of one really weird reading I did where the three wands came up, and I don't even use reversals, but it came up reversed. So I must have shuffled weird or something. And when that happens, I pay attention. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. This is reversed for a reason. And I took it to mean, because the client was asking about a relationship and, you know, intimacy issues. And I'm like, oh, he can't get it up. You know, like I just blurted that out because the wands were upside down. And she's like, oh my God, how did you know that? And I'm like, I don't know. but is that the problem? And, you know, is he willing to, like, you know, seek out some help for that? Maybe you two could, you know, go together to a professional getting it up person, whatever that person is. I don't know about those things so much, but how do you account for such a weird thing to just pop out and to be accurate? Is that being psychic? Is that intuition? Is that the cards somehow?
Yeah, that I think, Mary, is what we were talking about before, where you need the structure, but that has to be married to your intuition. And the more you can strengthen your intuition through working through meditation, through doing meditative exercises, through creating better amount of self-love for yourself and self-care for yourself, that intuition is going to strengthen. And that's going to be those little aha moments in the reading where you're just going to be overwhelmed by something that seems off, or that, you know, this is the meaning of the card, but something about it is telling you to go in a different direction. And that, I think, is where the intuition comes into play and how it can get married to the deck. That's a perfect example of what we were talking about before, because there is nothing about that card, the Three of Wands, that screams impotency.
Right.
I was thinking, if anything, like the Ace of Wands reversed. but three, why is there three wands? That's very
I think I thought in a sense I think of the three wands sort of as a, I think of it as a card of assessment. You know, we're standing back, we're looking at things, you know, the ship's coming in or whatever, but we're kind of taking stock in a sense sometimes with it. And you know, and I felt like it was like taking stock of a situation, but for some reason the wands aren't pointing up. And then that just turned on my dirty little mind, I guess. That happens with tarot, right? I'm not the only one that it takes in that direction, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was brilliant. You know, it was absolutely. But, you know, gosh. We've been doing this for about an hour. We'll wrap up. But I was thinking, you know, maybe we should chit chat just a little bit about, you know, where do you think this is all going? You know, now that tarot is becoming more mainstream and more popular every year, and with the internet, and that more and more people can come to it, you know, millions and millions instead of hundreds and thousands.
Well, Mary, I'll defer to you for the first.
Yes. Where do I think it's taking us? You know, I think, you know, and it's just my opinion, but I feel like it's like an opening up. I think that it may not just be about tarot. I think the good part of it from, you know, for what we do, is that it makes what we do more acceptable, more known to others, which is great. If we do this as professionals, it's nice to have that sense of a wider acceptance and a wider audience. And I really hope that it becomes something where, you know, it's not that special thing or that unusual thing or just that psychic fair thing or, ooh, you know, go visit somebody with a neon sign and, you know, make it all spooky. You know, I would like to see it become just sort of very common. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I think of it.
And Mary, I agree with that. I'm very happy that it is becoming more widely accepted, and that we don't have to hang out in dark little corners and be afraid to say, hey, I am a tarot reader, or I am a life coach that uses tarot in my practice. That's the good side of where I think this is going. I also think there is a downside to it. And that's simply because it is becoming so widely accepted, because there is the internet. There is so much differing information. There are so many people now that are calling themselves experts who don't really know boo, because they really haven't put the work into keeping the knowledge alive, that it's going to be watered down. And the knowledge is going to be lost, and it's going to be given to the hands of the half-wise or the children who really shouldn't be playing with certain toys. And I really fear that with the proliferation of tarot, the wider acceptance of it, that it's going to be the Wild West in a certain way, and that the speciality is going to be lost, and it's going to be harder and harder to find the people who really know their stuff. And believe me, I'm not including myself on this, because for as much as I know, I'm now learning in the last year that I know nothing. There's so much more to learn. There's so much more to study.
Yeah.
And my biggest fear is because of the acceptance, because there are people that are now coming in through Wicca, through Pagan, through movies, through TV, through Game of Thrones, through everything else, that they're not going to take the time.
Yeah.
To really learn, and they're going to be half-wise, and they're going to be giving bad information, and they're just going to be creating a worse problem.
I could see that.
That is really my biggest fear. I'm really happy that it's being widely accepted, but I'm also scared that the actual art and science is going to be lost.
Yeah. And, you know, and just I'd like to say something about that. I think it is important, because I fear the downside of it too. And I mean, I think of it in the sense of books. There's some books out there being written by people that it's like, what? What? What is this garbage? I hate to say that, but yeah, there's a lot of garbage out there. And I think it's so important to not lose sight of the people that really are, you know, knowledgeable and have been contributing to the good knowledge base of it. People like Mary Kay Greer, people like Rachel Pollack, people like Giordano Berti, who's a historian of this stuff from, like, you know, the very beginning of what was that, where they came from in Italy. And we We need to always, I feel like, be talking about them, be raising their profile. They have high profiles within the tarot community. Sure, there are gods and goddesses of tarot. Mm-hmm. You know, Robert Place is another. James Rickliff to me is another too. And I feel like we can't lose sight of what their body of work is. And I think that can help counterbalance all the garbage that is out there.
It does. It definitely can. We need to promote these people. We need to promote the to use your phrase, deities, the people who really know what's going on and are teaching it. And I believe that part of the issue and the expansion of it also comes from the New Age community, the New Thought community, the Law of Attraction community that is preaching love, light, unicorns, and rainbows. Right. And so it becomes almost a bad thing to say, no, you can't play with this toy. You can't play with this toy unless you are willing to do the work to learn how to use the toy properly. Right. But if you think about it, you wouldn't take someone who never had a driving lesson and put them behind a wheel of a car and go ahead, just drive, have fun.
Yeah.
Right. And but
that's why it's really important to have a centralizing, focusing place, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, like the Tarot Guild, where we can all come together and discuss all this.
Yeah. And that is, I think, that's one of the greatest gifts that you have given us by creating the guild for professionals and for tarot enthusiasts alike, that central community full of people, because there are professionals in there, because there are people like you and Mary who have been doing this and reading this and really made absorbing the knowledge for the last however long. I know the guild has been around for what, 14, 15 years now?
Yeah.
18.
People can come in.
It's gonna be 20 years, Gary, soon.
And oh my God. They can talk to an elder, they can talk to a wise one and get the real deal.
Yeah, we've got Corby Mitlide, we've got Pamela Steele, you know, a lot of people, you know, Sasha Graham's doing a lot of things for us and coming on our radio shows and things. So, you know, we have a lot of the knowledgeable and the elders, you know, and I'll include both of you as well. You know, we got Gary, we got Mary, you know, we've been around since the dinosaurs. And but, you know, I still feel really positive and hopeful, at least overall. And I'm glad that tarot is becoming more popular, that it's being accepted. I do want to point out that I still think we have a long way to go, because even when you see it being presented in a mainstream publication, for instance. Mary, what's some of the ones that you've seen recently?
Oh my gosh. It's, you know, it is now this thing that, well, it's akin to astrology, you know, how a lot of magazines and publications will have a page or two of like, here's your astrological reading for the month of whatever the issue is. And now they've added, especially online, you know, publications like Cosmopolitan even released their own Cosmo tarot deck.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's a Cosmo tarot deck. And I'm not so sure about that deck.
I wasn't impressed, let's put it that way, you know, but hey, good effort, you know. We try to do something cosmopolitan.
And Mary, and to your, I'm sorry, go ahead.
They'll do like a weekly thing on the, you know, on, you know, for content on their websites that go with those magazines and stuff. So they weren't doing that before. So that's one way.
And right. But I do want to point out real quick, finish up my thought, why I brought this up and why I asked Mary about the publications. You know, it's getting out there, but when you read the articles and you look at everything, they're still in the days of, you know, the psychic with the neon sign thing, you know, and the death card, you know, and
oh yeah,
does it really mean death? Yeah, they're still asking that question, you know, 30 years later, we're into this.
Yes.
And so that's what I meant by, we still have a long way to go in, I mean, us and the people in the Tarot Guild and a lot of people online in the tarot communities. Yeah, we get it, but I'm talking about the general public and what they read in Cosmopolitan. You know?
And here, and Mary, this goes to your point and the expansion of tarot in a bad way, in a commercialization way. A friend of mine a couple of days ago sent me an article that McDonald's is running. McDonald's has teamed up with an online in tarot influencer. And if you buy a meal, you'll get a free tarot reading.
Wow.
Okay.
Huh.
That will expose tarot to the greater community, but it is lowering it to the to garbage. Right.
Or fast food.
And this is what I'm talking about when I say that children shouldn't have toys. Right. Yeah. Because McDonald's just saw it as an opportunity. This influencer saw it as an opportunity. Great. Hey, go make all the money you can. I'm not against that. But then when it comes to somebody who wants to start a legitimate tarot business, and you know, if you're starting a tarot business online, offline, you're going to be charging probably $100 minimum for a 30-minute or an hour read, depending on what you want to do. And people are going to turn around to you at that point and go, well, I can buy a Happy Meal and get a tarot reading. So it lowers the art, the science, and how it could help people, because now it's become commoditized.
Right. It's fast food tarot.
But we do have a long way to go. I mean, look at James Rickliff. So he's been using the same tagline, you know, I'm not a fortune teller, I'm a fortune helper, for 20 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, a lot of us have shifted. I mean, some of us were always there, but a lot of folks are shifting now, where we're using tarot as a life coaching tool. And that's where I see things going, you know, but the general public is 30-40 years behind.
Right.
Educating everybody that it's not about predicting the future. It's about looking at the present, looking at the past, seeing the trajectory and into the future, possible outcomes. And what can we do with that? You know, how can we set goals? And maybe you want to go there. Maybe you don't want to go there to that outcome, you know?
Yeah, I think that makes a big difference. And still though, I do feel that it almost, you know, there's a lot of tarot readers in the world, and I think that, you know, of all different stripes, and I think there's people seeking tarot readings of all different kinds. There's always, I think, going to be people that are in for the thrill of it. You know, they want you to, you know, spook them. They want you to tell them something. And I think it's up to us all individually is how we want to practice tarot. I'm personally
party
make
trick.
It. Yeah. I personally, you know, I don't try to, you know, I'm, you know, I go by pterodactyl. I'm a tarot dinosaur. I'm not, you know, the mysterious, mystical somebody who's going to tell you exactly what to do with your life and when you're going to die or something.
You can't look mysterious and all in that pterodactyl outfit you wear. So
right in my costume, dancing, costume, holding the sun card. Yeah, you know, and it's because I want people to kind of relax and, you know,
laugh a little maybe.
Laugh a little,
seriously.
Not take it all too seriously. And number one, to know that I have no interest in telling them what to do with their life. I'm here to show them, like, you know, the possibilities and, you know, encourage them to make the decisions that are, you know, gonna be of benefit to them.
Oh, you know, as it is International Tarot Day, I think we should point out that in a large majority of the world, perhaps most of it, except for some Western countries and, you know, North America, when you're in a lot of Europe and Asia, and especially like South America, and I don't know how much in Africa, but in a lot of these huge swaths of the world, it is still all about fortune telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we have to keep that in mind. And that's what a lot of people want.
Absolutely. But, you know, at the same time, you know, look, I'm impressed by a fortune teller that really nails it. I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, you call yourself whatever you want. Holy cow. You know, but I think the majority of them do not nail it. And I think the majority of them are there just to, party tricks. And you know, I'm all about entertainment too. There's that aspect of it, but oh, you know, you.
That stigma though is still there then, you know, and the buy the $1,000 candle to get rid of the curse thing, you know, it's.
That's the worst. That is the absolute worst. But you know, there's a, what was it? There's a sucker born every minute, right? Mm-hmm. You know? And I don't know, sometimes, you know, there's a great lesson in that. However, you know, I don't know how people discern, you know, between what is just a charlatan and a, you know, a party trick and kind of a, just a fun entertainment thing, and what can really be beneficial to them. And I think at least in America, there seems to be a good number of people that are seeking the real, is the way I'd put it.
Right.
And I'm glad.
And I think the big thing is, I mean, it's not like predictive elements don't come up when I'm doing a reading. And on the radio show, I'm often asked for timing and predictive or semi-predictive information and things like that, you know, and I accommodate, of course, but trying to remember where I'm going with this. But it's.
Well, you do it in such a way on the radio show, since I'm your co-host, you know, you do it in such a way that it's realistic. You're like, okay, look, this is a time frame indicated by this card. Possibly. You know,
you know, and it's
it's,
you know,
honest.
What I'm getting at is, like, you know, coming from a trusted person, and they're not trying to tell you what to do.
Basically, yeah.
You know, this is what's going to happen. It's written in stone, and you have to follow my advice, or you have to do this X, Y, Z. And that's why it's important to have a group like the Tarot Guild, where at least the people we certify are very like-minded.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all about empowering the client and giving them information and allowing them to make their own choices and not pretending that we're predicting the future. It's set in stone. It's fate. You can't change it. You can't go in a different direction. For me, tarot is most powerful when it is showing you the current situation, the trajectory from the past into the present moment and out into the future, potential outcomes, and then giving you that information. And then you can decide if you want to go there or not.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, because that's the thing. It's like, where are you headed if you continue, you know, the way that you're approaching things? You know, where might that possibly lead? And if you don't like that, well, change it up.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe, God, I could be I could talk about this stuff with you guys for hours and hours more, but maybe next year or the year after, you know, we'll have a weekend or a week long panel discussions, you know, where we can tease out, you know, different parts and focus in on different things each day or something like that, you know.
That would be awesome.
But I think, you know, it's been an hour and a half. I think we should wrap things up here. But we've got a lot more happening this weekend, you know. So we have Tarot Today Radio tomorrow. If you want to call in and get a mini reading and join us in the chat room on thetarotguild.com. And then Sunday's going to be fabulous. Sasha Graham, Rider-Waite Smith with Sharona Rapsick on her radio show. And you can call in on Sharona's show as well, get a mini reading or talk tarot. But yeah, thanks for the idea, Gary, and for the kickoff and joining us, and Mary for coming in and hanging out with us.
Yeah, this was fun.
It was definitely fun, and thank you for having us on and allowing us to talk a little bit about our tarot journeys as we celebrate International Tarot Day, because it's all about the appreciation of tarot to plug anything or sell anything. It's just like, look, this is why we love tarot. Here's our feelings and opinions on it. And I think what also came across is we could have differing opinions and still belong to the same guild and still be respectful and friendly and work together, which is wonderful.
Right.
And again, thank you for putting all this together.
Yeah. Thanks, Dax. And everybody, you know, also, you know, look for posts this weekend, you know, for you guys, you know, for International Tarot Weekend, there's interesting things always happening, and you know, some things too, that shows us what's happening even beyond, you know, what we're doing in America.
Exactly.
That will be posted.
Yes. We're definitely going to get up what Giordano is doing in Italy.
Oh, there's that great video showing like how the engraving on a stone to make the cards like they did back in the day happens. It's so fascinating. So that's something
that's
to look forward to.
Video. We'll get that out for all of you as well.
Yeah.
Look for it on an article post on the Tarot Guild website. Hopefully later today or tomorrow.
Yep.
But in time for International Tarot Weekend. So,
woo-hoo!
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.